Welcome to the Bitcoin.com news podcast. Today's guest is Alan Brenzikofer, the CTO and co-founder of Integrity Network. Alan, can you start by describing to our audience exactly what problem does Integrity seek to solve?
Sure. Thanks for having me on the show. What is Integrity about? What do we try to solve? We nowadays share a lot of data with online services, and that data is protected while it is in transfer. So we have transport protocol encryption, we have encryption of the data at rest, but what we don't really have today is protection of the data while the data is processed. So we have data in transit and at rest is protected, but in use, we still have a lot to do to enhance privacy, to also deliver confidentiality for secrets. Or we see a potential there to solve that, so that you don't just need to trust the terms of service of the online service you're sharing your data with, but that you can get actual proof about what happens to your data. And that's where the auditability comes in. So we want to solve the trust problem when it comes to processing data, so to say. And it goes a bit further in the blockchain space. We think there are big challenges that we can solve with our approach as well. First, confidentiality also, because blockchains are very, very transparent. A lot of linkable information there, but also scalability and interoperability. So we kind of see that if we want adoption of blockchain technology, that we need to tackle these three issues. And that is what we're aiming at. And the tool that we want to use for that is a trusted execution environment. And I guess that's what we will talk about more in this show.
Sure. Yeah, privacy and security are a big deal right now. And, you know, just a few days ago, we've seen one of the biggest or most popular brokers among, you know, day traders and young people that, you know, share a similar audience with crypto have a major security breach. So, you know, that's definitely a very important topic that you're trying to tackle. Can you tell me a little bit about trusted execution environments? What does that mean in practice?
Yes, absolutely. So it's still a niche technology, and so let me phrase it very in simple terms. It's we are today very used to the fact that the administrator of a computer, of a machine, of a server can actually do everything. Whoever has admin privileges can see all the data, can change all the data, can change processes, what they actually do, so upgrade software or install a different software. And we somehow got used to the fact that this power is there. And the problem is, even if we trust our administrators, if a hacker by any means can gain administrative privileges, that hacker can do all of that stuff as well. And that's why we see all these leaks, because once someone is in the system, then you have access to more or less everything. And now a trusted execution environment is a mitigation to that problem in the sense that it's a hardware guarantee by design of the CPU that prevents that the operator of the system can see the memory of a process. So this enclave, as we call it, can execute a process and have encrypted memory access so that the administrator doesn't see the data which goes in, goes out, or is processed. And even better, the administrator cannot tamper with that software. So the hardware itself can measure the hash of the binary which is executed and can even prove that to a remote party. So with the help, so we are concretely, we are using Intel SGX technology, and Intel as the manufacturer of that hardware can remotely attest that the CPU is genuine and it can attest what process is actually executed. And now, of course, we would like to onboard other technologies, other manufacturers, and we think that a public blockchain is actually the perfect place or the perfect solution to prove to any user of the system that this remote attestation is passing. So the blockchain should be able to supply that proof. And that's actually the combination of trusted execution and the public blockchain. That's what we are about, what Integrity is about.
So under this use case, do you still have to trust the hardware manufacturers such as Intel?
Yes. Yes, you do have to trust them in basically two ways. You have to trust the manufacturer their design, so that their CPU is designed and the microcode and the software are designed in a way that really fulfills these requirements. And you also have to trust the manufacturer to be honest about the remote attestation. So the manufacturer could pretend that a device which might be a fake could pretend that that's an original device. So in these ways, we have to trust the manufacturers. And that is, in a way that trust can be diversified by using different technologies. So we could use open source designs like Keystone, for example, or I mean, there are other manufacturers like ARM or AMD working on such technologies. However, the trusted execution environments, they actually give us two promises. One promise is that the data stays confidential, and the other is that a process is executed with integrity, so without being tampered with. Now, if we diversify the technologies to kind of not rely on a single manufacturer, then we improve the situation for integrity, because we can kind of find a consensus among different manufacturers, different designs. But we potentially make the situation worse for confidentiality, because if we have several manufacturers, several designs executing the same use case, that means it only takes one of the designs to leak the data, which actually worsens the situation there. So that's what we are facing there. But on the topic of trust, I just want to add one thing. basically, we are trusting the manufacturers of our devices anyway already. And that is also the case if we use pure cryptographic solutions, like zero knowledge, multi-party computation, whatever. We always execute that stuff on devices that might have backdoors. So in that sense, to me, trusted execution environments are just an additional obstacle, an additional additional improvement of cybersecurity. And it's always a race against time. And you always need to be very quick with reacting to new vulnerabilities or to changes of, let's say, best practices.
For sure. Today we see, you know, the crypto space specifically being targeted, but, you know, on a larger scale, we can see there's a lot of, even state actors that are now, engaged in hacking, for various reasons. So definitely, a solution that can increase our trust in the system or increase our ability to know that, our information is confidential without increasing the amount of parties we need to trust. Like, as you say, we already trust the manufacturers anyway, because we're using our systems, they can always have a backdoor. So
it's a good point what you say also about state interventions and attacks. That's why I see a big potential of open source designs, because if we trust manufacturers, that always to a certain extent means we also trust the government where that company has their headquarters, right? Because they might be subject to legal force. And I think if we can, on our roadmap, of course, we don't have these devices readily available now, but that is something where we want to go to, that we have an open source design which goes through peer review, which can be manufactured by different silicon fabs. And then the individual silicon fabs can kind of add fab out, kind of really burn in the remote attestation of their devices, such that we don't even need them in the future to remotely attest their devices.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I mean, with the amount of money that are online right now, I wouldn't be surprised if in the future people are going to demand, like paranoid level of security.
Yes.
Know, especially once, not to get political, but we're seeing, if we'll get to a situation like a cold war between the US and China, there's probably going to be a lot of mistrust in the market between all type of manufacturers. So, that's probably going to be an issue.
And it's maybe not the choice that we want to be faced with, right? Just select either the manufacturer from the US or the manufacturer from China. So it's I hope there are other ways. There will be other ways, or that's what we're working towards. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like when you select your mobile carrier right now, when countries need to install 5G, so they need to decide who do they want to spy on their citizen. Is it the Chinese or the Americans?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So your solution will basically need to be installed by the service provider, the companies that we access and we give our data. So how do you convince an enterprise level client to use a public blockchain ecosystem?
Well, I would say enterprise clients are one part of our target audience. So I think also dApps can benefit a lot, just to say that much. But for enterprises, I think we have a very good offering, because let's look at why do I think that enterprises don't use public blockchains nowadays? We have they are faced with a loss of control, so they no longer know who is running the infrastructure. It's hard to process confidential information, be it personal sensitive data, like where they have to fulfill legal requirements, like the GDPR, for example, so data protection, or be it company secrets, which they just don't want to share with their competitors. They also face scalability issues. That's why a lot of, the private blockchain technologies, they face more on the scalability and less on the decentralization aspect, well, obviously. And they also face unpredictable operation expenses. So if you deploy something on, well, let's say Ethereum, then you are somehow dependent on the gas cost of whatever use case you want to bring there, of the smart contracts that are involved. And that is unpredictable, and enterprises don't like that. They are not there for speculation. They have a concrete use case that they want to see running, and they need predictable cost for that. And now what we can answer in that regard is, so let's take loss of control at the first. With our system, it doesn't really matter who is operating that trusted execution environment. And so in that sense, we can say an enterprise client can take care of their own infrastructure. Thanks to the TE, we don't have to trust them directly, because it's executed in a TE. So they can actually choose the jurisdiction where the infrastructure will be running. And they can even run it themselves, or have kind of a cloud service provider doing that for them, kind of infrastructure as a service, or that kind of thing. And that is, I think, a good argument, especially for legal reasons. The confidentiality thing, I believe there we can be an enabler. So we cannot say deploy your use case on Integrity and you will be GDPR compliant. That's not how it works. But we can provide a middle layer, middleware, which enables confidential processing, and which, if the application is designed right, can be GDPR compliant, although we use the blockchain. And privacy is not the only issue there. It's also the right for deletion, for example. And we can provide that, because the sidechains that we offer, they don't rely on the fact that we keep the entire blockchain back to Genesis. We can do a pruning of these side chains, and therefore deliver the kind of the possibility to delete your data. And the side chains are actually also our answer to the scalability problem, because if we can validate our side chains in a TE, that means that that the validators can actually trust each other, because they mutually remote attest each other. And that is one of the big reasons why scalability is such an issue, that validators cannot mutually trust each other. And this way we can easily shard problems, we can easily parallelize use cases. And specifically about the parachain that we want to launch in the Polkadot ecosystem, the unpredictable OPEX, that's in our tokenomics design. We have designed the fees to be stable. So We have an oracle which tells our parachain how much our tier token is worth, and then we adjust the fees based on that. And now this actually works even in terms of tokenomics, because we burn a certain fraction of the fees and we collect the rest in a treasury to be spent on ecosystem development, on running infrastructure, and so on. So other than is the case with gas fees on Ethereum, we can actually provide planable expenses for sidechains that deploy on our parachain.
Yeah, as,
so I think mm-hmm. these are the main arguments why we think enterprises mm-hmm. could come from the. I mean, if they have looked at blockchain at all, then they mostly have looked at private permissioned systems, and I just fail to see the benefit of that. So it's kind of, yeah, why is that any better than it was before?
Yeah, I wish somebody on the consumer side will also think about ways to limit the gas fees, and but that's, you know, that's Ethereum's problem now, not on they're ready to be taken over sooner or later because of that.
Well, I mean, it's clear that these fees in a way are the means to allocate a limited resource. But the nice thing about being a parachain on Polkadot is kind of, if there is a market and our parachain is congested, then most likely we will be able to obtain another slot. You know, we can, so that there are ways how we could scale if there is congestion near. So we have different means than Ethereum has today.
Mm-hmm. And as a second layer sidechain on Polkadot, what are the benefits that Integrity offers for developers?
This is actually that goes back to the history of our project. We really started building with Substrate technology, and we are amazed by how generic this platform is and how much you can really do with it. And we want to deliver the same experience to developers of our sidechains, and that is why we built our sidechain SDK to be compatible with Substrate runtimes. So Substrate is actually the kind of the blockchain building toolbox that Polkadot is built on, and it works with the kind of the business logic of all these blockchains is encapsulated in this so-called runtime, which consists of different modules which are called palettes. And these palettes that are developed for Substrate, you can instantiate them in our sidechains one-to-one. So we actually wrap a Substrate runtime in our enclave, and that actually means that the entire ecosystem can easily migrate a use case and benefit from confidentiality and scalability and, well, interoperability if you want to connect to some Web2 APIs like REST interfaces or SOAP or whatever. Yeah.
And what use cases do you expect to be adopted on your platform?
Well, as Integrity is an enabling middleware, I think there's a vast amount of use cases, whatever can benefit from what we deliver. But of course, we have ideas about what would fit really well. In the decentralized space, we can imagine to do decentralized exchanges Very performant decentralized exchanges, because now we have the problem that you have the risk of front running, because you have an asynchronous system where not everyone has the same information at the same time. And this we could prevent with T's, but also we could execute much more performant market matching engines and so on in a TE than we could in a smart contract. Then we have self-sovereign identity, which I believe, well, it's a topic which is very dear to me, and I also believe there we can do a lot in terms of selective disclosure, so that you can use verifiable credentials, you can combine different credentials and just just provide very specific information. For example, I mean, the easy example is you want to buy a beer and you need to prove that you're over, I don't know, well, in Switzerland is 16, others, well, that you have a certain age. Now, you don't want to tell who you are, you don't want to tell when your birthday is, you just want to prove I am older than this. And of course, that is something that can be done with zero knowledge proof as well. But now, if you want to combine that with different things, for example, like I have a degree from such and such university, and I'm a father of two kids of the age between this and this. Well, this can, I mean, it's a random example, but as soon as you try to combine such credentials, then TEs are a very nice way, because you can, it just generalizes better than purely cryptographic solutions, I think.
That sounds very interesting.
Please.
Can I just ask, in that case, in order for something like that to work, would I need a client side, like on my phone or on my computer, a TE, or is that just on server?
Well, there are different ways how you could do this architecture, but the idea of SSI would be that you are in charge of the information, of the verifiable credentials, so you can have that on your device. You can even protect that with T's on your device, but that's already an extension. But it's more like you would have a service which acts as an intermediary for combining these verifiable credentials. And maybe you don't want to rely only on your phone. So it could even be the custodian of certain credentials. But then we want to make sure that we don't have to trust the operator of such a service. And that's where the TEs come in. So you could have an open source software which says, okay, if you give me this and this credential, then you can exactly see what happens to these credentials, what information goes out. And if you then have a deterministic build of that software and the remote attestation that this runs on a TE, then you're actually already pretty secure in that sense, compared to what we are used to today.
Got it. Yeah, that sounds actually very very much needed, I would say. That's a big issue that we're facing right now with even in countries that don't have GDPR and stuff like that, just the need to prove for company side that you're complying requires you sometimes to like require more information that you wanna have. So I think like having a trusted way to just get the information that confirmed, like let's say age, for example, without having to acquire more information from a client, I think that's that would be very good for both sides.
Yeah, that's definitely what I would like to see happening. Yeah, and as you say, that's nicely put. It's good for both sides, because it's not, you know, it's not that all enterprises would like to collect data because data is the new gold. It's also a big liability, so it really benefits both sides if we can improve the security of that data. On the use cases, I now presented kind of the decentralized two examples for decentralized, but on the enterprise side, I see a lot of potential for confidential insights, and that is not about privacy of individuals anymore. It's more about trade secrets. So you may want to draw information from market data, from maybe a few key performance indicators, that if you could pool data from different companies, you could draw a lot more valuable insights. But this is not happening today because these individual companies, they don't want to put together their data because they don't want to show it to one another. But the point is, if they don't do that, that actually means we will probably end up with a data oligopoly where we only have a few very big companies aggregating a lot of data and monetizing all the insight from that. But from our perspective, it's if mid-sized companies could pool together all the information that they have, and they can be sure that they know what happens to their data, and they know it doesn't go to their competitors because it's processed along the rules of the code, which is, yeah, in the best case, open source, at least to all the participants. Then you could draw a lot better information, a lot better analytics from this data without relying on some giant, whatever, world dominating data aggregator.
That's very interesting.
Not naming any.
Yeah. So, you know, ideally we can live in a world where we can both benefit from big data and not have these, you know, giant silos of information controlled by a handful of corporations that, you know, all of our data. It's very interesting.
And maybe we can add, well, I mean, there are tons of others, but I think health data is also a very interesting one, because that's maybe among the most sensitive personal information. And it's something where I think a lot of people, I guess the majority, if you have to choose between privacy and health, I guess people will choose health. And even more important because of that, I think it is that we be very careful with our health data. And here I think we can also do a lot with kind of confidential computing, so that we can enable analysis on large pools of health data to gain additional insight for improving whatever medical care. I think there we could also deliver an enabling technology for that.
That's very interesting, because at the moment, in some countries, you need to show, you know, a vaccination report wherever you go, and those things are just like privacy nightmare. They're basically giving away all your private information just to go into a bar. So
And what is really funny about that use case is you always need that certificate when you're physically present. And so why exactly is a digital solution better than a piece of paper here? So that's what I don't get about this case. We try to, find privacy preserving solutions to verify these certificates. But in this case, I just don't see why we even expose this information so much, because we could solve it with ancient technology, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Your technology is something that's needed, but more than that, we need, in this case, governments and health bodies to understand the importance of privacy and understand that there are solutions. So I really hope that this information can reach them. Okay.
We kind of are promoting a niche technology here, which is not yet on the list of, let's say, solutions that are widely known. So we try to establish a new tool to enhance privacy, so to say.
Yeah, hopefully by the next pandemic, the importance of this will be clear to everybody. So last questions I wanted to get to is how will the governance of the integrity parachain look like?
So we, as a parachain, obviously, we want to decentralize. That is the goal. Like all the others, we will start off with, let's say, a rather authoritarian structure in the beginning of having a super user. Mm-hmm. But that is something we want to get rid of as quickly as possible. And then we are very fond of Polkadot's governance design, and we will adopt quite a few bits from there. So the idea is that we have the entirety of the token holders of the tier token can actually define what the future will be of the integrity parachain. So we actually, as the initiators, as the company which builds and launches this platform now, we should become irrelevant for that platform sooner or later, or kind of a merely a service provider to that platform. And we intend to do that with a council. So there will be a representative body as soon as the governance topics will have a bigger importance, and as soon as the token distribution has reached a certain minimum, because if we see that the majority of tokens who will be able to vote on certain decisions is not yet really distributed, it doesn't make sense to think too much about the representative body, I think. This is actually what we see on Polkadot in evolving and in innovating themselves is what we would like to see on integrity on the parachain as well. So we can have these forkless updates. So the idea is really that if we have a new code which should be running for the parachain, we don't have to fork neither soft fork nor hard fork. The technology of Substrate allows us to first submit the code on chain and then vote on that code and either accept it or not. And then it is defined by what block height we can enact that update. And that is the most, or that is the strongest decision of governance, I would say, the future code. But also, I previously I said that fees, a part of the fees will be collected in a treasury, and this treasury is not an account that anyone has a private key to and can spend the funds. No, it's subject to the governance of the parachain to define what this money will be spent on. And that is probably the next governance case that we will see there, that companies, service providers, infrastructure operators can apply for funding and can then receive pay for their services. And that is a very different design than if you do kind of staking and validator rewards and so on. That's what we don't do. Because Polkadot or Kusama, for that matter, they already care for the security of the system. So we don't think we need to further incentivize the infrastructure in that way. But the operation costs should be covered, of course. So in that sense, I think the main questions is how to spend the money and what should be the next code. These are the fundamental governance questions that the platform will have to answer.
Yeah, that sounds like a good challenge to tackle, and it will be very interesting to see how it develops. And
absolutely,
yeah. Alan, do you want to add anything before we wrap up?
Well, I think we have covered a lot. Of course, there's a lot more to talk about. But
so, how would people get more information about what you're working on?
Well, certainly on our website, integrity.network. We also have a few videos where you can, like, presentations and explainers, blogs. So I suggest you hit integrity.network, and from there you can see all the documentation, tokenomics, light paper, code documentation, tutorials, and so on. And we encourage everyone with especially the developers. What we build is actually a tool set, is an SDK, and you're invited to start and play with it. We have many tutorials, and we are curious to learn about more use cases of our tech.
Sounds exciting. So you heard the developers. Go over to integrity.network and start developing your solutions right now. Thank you very much, Alan, for taking the time and speaking to us. You have been listening to the Bitcoin.com news podcast. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
Okay.